This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Great afternoon, mid-Michigan and beyond. Jack Ebling here on News Talk 870 Sports, and today our co-host, Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal. Hello, Graham. How are you?
I'm well, Jack. Yourself?
Good, and a lot warmer here than I was about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, I was worried you weren't going to be here. I thought I was going to be flying solo. I had very little prepared, and it was going to be a very interesting hour. But I actually was looking forward to the ad-lib challenge. So,
Tom Crawford and I used to do a show over at The Ticket. And, you know, it was kind of like, where in the world is Jack Ebling coming in here? Wondering. He was always wondering that. So, but we made it. So want to talk a lot about college football today. And we're going to have a very special guest at about 1:25. Susie Merchant, head coach of the Michigan State women's basketball team, will be with us.
Big win last night for them.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely was. Not just a team, Graham. I think it's really a program. And you see that with the attendance over there, with the way that fans have responded. And when they talked to Michigan coach Kim Barnes-Arrico, she mentioned that, wow, this is what we want to be someday.
Yeah, it what's amazing to me, and this is something we can ask Susie about a little bit, is just that this is a team that – this is not the team that Susie Merchant thought she had at the beginning of the year. And
not at all.
And she's kind of – I don't want to say smoke and mirrors. That negates some really good players on that team. But,
right.
But she certainly stapled some things together at times, and it's certainly a team that – is probably different than she imagined, but you know, and I've asked her a couple times. Eventually, you are what your record is,
right?
And their record is pretty good right now. It's hard to ignore,
right? Very good, actually. And if you look at what they have done this season, I think it would surprise most people. But here they are in a tie for third place in the Big Ten, and a big game coming up this weekend against Penn State. We'll talk about that with Susie and much, much more. We're also going to talk Michigan State men's basketball. Very important game, aren't they all? But tomorrow, Minnesota coming in and a chance for Michigan State to exact some revenge for a game you saw.
Yeah, it's a team that I actually thought Michigan State outplayed Minnesota most of the game the first time they played them. I think it was a game that Michigan State players will tell you they learned a lot about themselves, about where they actually could compete in the Big Ten and what they were ready for. Because, you know, they had an up-and-down December and November, and they went into Minneapolis, and the wheels kind of came off at the end. Izzo has talked about that. Those guys have talked about it. They didn't finish.
Right.
But I think they're a better team than Minnesota. But you have to protect your home court if you're gonna win this league. I mean, I think we'll get into this a little bit, but I think the thing that may cost Indiana at the end of this is that home loss to Wisconsin.
Yeah, you can't lose at home. That's one of the maxims of winning a Big Ten championship, and Indiana did that early. We'll see if they can overcome it. We'll talk much more about that, and we'll take your calls. 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870 or 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Our guest, Graham Couch, he is our co-host for the next 50 minutes. We'll be talking about Michigan State football recruiting around the Big Ten in the country, and also women's basketball, men's basketball, and we'll be taking your calls. We also have some tickets to give away. Graham, I was surprised not just to see these hockey tickets for the Bowling Green game on Saturday night. We also have a pair of tickets. This is a hot item here. My hand's burning.
Yeah.
For the Michigan-Michigan State game on Tuesday, February 12th in Breslin Center. And you were just talking about how difficult it is to get these tickets.
Yeah, a former editor I used to work with, a group of us are going on a gift, and you know, we're spending upwards of $500 for a couple of tickets. What was funny is our producer came in here and just nonchalantly had the tickets as if, you know, he wasn't holding gold.
Yeah, I just reached in my bag. I got a few more here, yeah. You can call in and register for these tickets. We're going to give them out toward the end of the show, the hockey tickets and the basketball tickets. And if you have a preference, you can let that be known. Otherwise, we'll just have a couple of names drawn, and we'll announce that at the end of the show, the number to call. For the ticket drawing, 517-884-4783. Graham, signing day tomorrow. It's one of the days where everyone wins. Every school in the country, very optimistic because recruiting sells hope.
The best thing about signing day is the phrases. I mean, edge guy, immediate contributor. You learn all sorts of new stuff. You know, and edge guy used to be my favorite phrase in the world. You know, everybody's looking for an edge guy. And then last year, I think D'Antonio said, at least seven times immediate contributor or something along that line. And there were almost no immediate contributors. And if you have a good program, there rarely are.
Right.
You don't want a ton of immediate contributors. But, yeah, it's one of those days where you do sell hope. And the thing that makes it important, though, is it's the first day the coach can talk about these guys.
Right.
So you get a feeling about some guys, and you do get some quotes on the record to look back at guys years before. And obviously, recruiting's the name of the game. I mean, it may be kind of funny that because none of these guys will contribute next year, but everybody was once a recruit, and if you're going to have a winning program, this is where it's done.
Absolutely. And when you think about what football is all about, it's a 12-month-a-year business. We mean business. And when you think about the time that's spent in recruiting, in many cases, it's more than his actual on-the-field preparation for games.
Yeah, I would be a horrible college football coach because I would be looking to take most of January off, maybe some most of July.
You'd be an unemployed football coach.
Well, yeah, I would be. I'd have to find a losing Division III program and hope they stuck with me for other reasons or something. But, yeah, no, the game has changed, too. I think there's some things that probably need to be worked in college football. Right now, there's more flip-flopping right now in terms of decommitments than maybe I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
And then, maybe an early signing period's warranted something. They're going after kids earlier and earlier, and it's, Urban Meyer's obviously changed this league because he's a pretty aggressive recruiter, can talk a lot of kids into stuff in homes. And, I don't like the recruiting game. I don't like covering it. I don't like much about it. But I also understand why it matters and why people are fascinated by it.
I don't cover it nearly as closely as I used to when I was at the Lansing State Journal doing a lot of the things you're doing now. We started the Catch 22 back in 1984. And that was actually George Perlis's idea.
Was it really?
Yeah, it really was. And he was crazy.
But how did that idea go? What did he come up to you?
We were sitting in his office one day, and we're talking about the best of the Midwest list and the blue chip list and all these things. And he said, why don't you have your own list? And I said, well, I guess I could if I could get enough expertise to put it together. He said, why don't you get the coaches to help you? Well, that's easier said than done. I mean, he would give you anything. He'd sit there and tell you his game plan if you wanted. And it was pretty easy to get Eastern, Western, and Central involved. Dick Flynn was a big help with that. A little bit tougher to get the University of Michigan involved. And we wanted to have the five schools from the state.
Sure.
Finally, we found someone who had access and would give us information. But then the NCAA changed the rules on what they could do and how they could cooperate. And things changed. Coaches moved around, so it became much tougher. But still in effect, it's still at the Lansing State Journal. So
it's a staple. It's something
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up
thank
reading
George
that.
For that.
Yeah, I did not know that. That's an interesting story. It's a really interesting story.
One of those days where I'd heard all the Lynn Swann stories I wanted to hear, and he came out with that one. So we'll take it. When you look at what Michigan State has done, Graham, recruiting-wise, they've gotten a lot of players who have become key contributors who were not high-profile recruits. A lot of guys who were three-star recruits or some two-star recruits. Kirk Cousins loves telling the story about sitting over at the cafeteria at McDonnell Hall and him giving this speech to all these guys who nobody wanted about how they were going to win a Big Ten championship, and that's exactly what happened.
It is the star system is fat. I mean, it's bogus, is what it is. Let's be honest. I mean, there's a guy I covered for a while. He was a big recruit out of North Miami Beach. Went to the University of Miami for a while. His name was Doug Wiggins. Wound up at Western Michigan, the biggest recruit they had for a while. Really a bust overall. But he was in Butch Davis's office, and he was upset. He was like the number six defensive back in the country because he was a four star. So Butch is like, hold on. Story goes, Butch makes a call. He's a five star. And I get that there's something to it. And the flip side of that is there's a kid from the same high school named Louis Delmas, who's with the Lions now, played at Western, who was a two-star. And, I mean, so really, I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't something behind the evaluation and there isn't a level of expertise, but Le'Veon Bell's, a two-star kid mostly, by a lot of people. And sometimes you see a lot when kids sign where they sign, then they're stars.
Sure.
They suddenly gain
That's
stars.
Right. They gain
I would love
stars.
I would love to see what happened if a five-star committed to Grand Valley, suddenly became a two-star. how that would go, but you're right with MSU, and they don't. This class again is mostly three, some four. There's not the guys who are. There's not what Nick Saban and Urban Meyer are pulling, and just aren't in this class. That's what they built this thing on, is developing players.
Even in basketball, Graham, you see a Steve Smith, who wasn't the most heralded player in his class. Scott Skiles was not. And you see that a lot with guys who come on and develop. But I think in basketball now, with all the AAU play, they have a pretty good idea who can play and who can't. And in football, you're talking about evaluating a 17-year-old and now younger and younger, 15- and 16-year-olds, and trying to project what they'll be at 21 and 22.
What you think about is a guy when you kind of come into your body.
Mm-hmm.
It is not at 15 and 16 years old.
Right.
The strongest you can really be is in that 19, 20-year-old, 21-year-old range. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's such an inexact science of football. I mean, I don't know. When did you put on your stockiness?
Well, really in the last few years. No, actually, I was probably 185 pounds most of the time, and now I'm a lot more than that.
But, well, see, now you're in your college football prime.
That's right. Now I'm ready to play defensive line for something. But when you think about what Michigan State has done, it shows how teams win. And if you look at Wisconsin over the years with all the Rose Bowls it's gone to, never had a top 30 recruiting class. Look at Nebraska historically winning national championships with classes were not highly valued. So part of it is evaluation. And part of it is player development. You got to get guys who fit into your system, who have potential. Nobody thought Keyshawn Martin was a great player. He was a high school quarterback. And they happened to find him. They got a film. They looked at him. They said, don't show anybody else's film. And able to get him. But they saw something, and they were right.
I mean, you look at that crew that won so many games for Michigan State over the last few years. None of those guys, Cousins,
no.
B.J. Cunningham, none of these guys were really heralded players.
And B.J. Cunningham would have walked to Columbus. He was in Columbus.
Yeah.
He would have walked to the Horseshoe. They didn't want him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing the mistakes that are made. I mean, but you can even look back at a guy in hoops, you know, Eric Snow, one of the great point guards. You're a high school power forward, and you have to see somebody, and I think that's as big a skill as being able to sit down in the living room and convince a kid is being able to see something that others can't, or a way they work within your offense, or you know. And the other flip side of that, you look at Michigan State this last year, great defense.
Yeah.
But you've got to recruit playmakers, and to me, you should always be able to sell like wideouts who want to be featured. You know that because there are only so many guys who get the ball 60 times a year for wideouts. I mean, if you don't have one, you should be able to sell a wideout on that position and figuring out who that guy is. You know, you can have all the guys up front, but if you don't have playmakers.
Michigan State didn't have enough playmakers last year.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, people always say, well, how are the offensive line recruits? That's what they look at. They want to see what kind of depth you have there. But again, Iowa, historically, took guys who were tall tight ends and made them into tackles.
It's I love watching offensive line recruits walk in too, because they're these like pudgy, you know, vulnerable, insecure 16-year-olds, and they're very different than other kids. It's kind of like big men in basketball.
Right.
They tend to commit early. They just want to find a place that's a home. And I have no idea how you project any of these. Some kids are mammoth, and you can say, okay, that's. I have no idea how you. I mean, because most of these kids are 3 years away from being 5'2" and 140 pounds, you know, and somewhere there was this, you know, almost unnatural growth spurt that I have no idea how you recruit an offensive lineman at 16 years old and have any clue what he's going to be.
You know, you mentioned Eric Snow. One of my favorite recruiting stories was on Judd's staff. He really liked Sean Respert. Sean was not a prolific scorer in high school. He was not. He was a defensive player, passed, did a lot of things, was a true guard. No one thought he would ever be the Big Ten's all-time leading scorer in conference play. Assistant coaches weren't that big on him. Tom Izzo wasn't that big on him. But they loved Eric Snow. Judd wasn't big on Eric Snow. Eric Snow was more of a scoring guy, was not a point guard, never played the point. But they kind of agreed, okay, well, we'll do this. Okay, then you do this. And they brought them both in, and it was fire and ice.
Yeah. Well, it took a while.
It did. It took a while.
Yeah.
It took quite a while for Eric to make a free throw.
Right. Sean Respert was fire before before Eric Snow was ice.
It was hot for a while because there was some fire and nothing to cool it off. We have a very special show planned tomorrow. I just want to tease that for a minute because we have Dan Kilbridge and Sean Shearer, 24/7 Sports, will be in here. And they know a lot more about recruiting than I do, I'll tell you that. But they follow it. And no one follows it any closer than Sean and has a life. So we also have a couple of very special guests I don't want to tell you who they are, but I can tell you you'll be very pleased when you hear those guests tomorrow. I was going to tell you a story about Tom Lemming. I got a chance to spend some time in his living room in Illinois. And, you know, he's a former mailman.
Is he really?
Yeah, that's what his line of work was. And he started this little recruiting thing.
All of a sudden, covering recruiting doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, and he started doing it out of his kitchen. And then he got a little bit more space, moved upstairs. And then he got someone to help him. And by the time it was over, you know, here he is. He's got this great recruiting service, making a ton of money. He's not delivering post office stuff anymore, so... We will be back in just a couple of moments, and we're going to be talking with Susie Merchant, MSU women's basketball coach, about the big win over Michigan last night, the challenge ahead this weekend with Penn State, and what's ahead for the Lady Spartans. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
The Oscar-nominated film Zero Dark Thirty opens with a declaration that the story is based on firsthand accounts of actual events. But lawmakers like Senator Dianne Feinstein take issue with the film's depictions of torture and want the film branded as fiction. I'm Celeste Headlee. The shifting opinions on what's torture and what's not. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation, coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
We'll have a high today of 27 degrees, and we're expecting 1 to 3 inches of snow. There's a chance of overnight snow, too, with a low of 10. For Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high of 26 degrees. On Thursday, snow is likely with an inch or less of new accumulation and a high of 35. I'm Scott Pohl.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. Jack Ebling. I'll be here all week sitting in for... I guess I can't say sitting in for Earl Robinson anymore because he's gone. But I did watch the Super Bowl with him other day. Yes.
How's he doing?
He's doing okay. We were over at Studio C.
Yeah, I've heard about
we
this
We went
place
over there. It was a great place to watch the game. And he and his wife, Yvette, were over there. The worst part about watching a game with Earl is if he ever gets it right, which he did for the Super Bowl, you'll hear about it for the next 12 years.
Has he gotten it right before in the last 12 years?
Once. No, I maybe once or twice. Not very often.
Good. So
the
like
good
a
news
rollover,
is it doesn't happen a lot. But the bad news is when it happens, it just chirps. You know, we've talked about trash talk before.
Yeah.
And you appreciate the value of trash talk. Earl is a classic trash talker. He's the kind of guy, if you're playing pickup basketball, by the end of the game, you want to pop him right in the beezer.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, you guys would get along well. You'd be teammates. While we're waiting for Susie Merchant, let's go out to our phones. The numbers again, 877-WKAR-870 or 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. And let's go to Todd in Lake Orion. Hello, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Good.
And I'm glad you brought up recruiting and talking about it. I followed to an extent as it relates to Michigan State. But the one thing about recruiting that I always wonder about and, you know, that to me never gets brought up, and I want to see if you gentlemen agree with this. Let's say you bring in a recruiting class for football and you bring in 30 kids so that it's a nice round number. The thing that nobody ever talks about is this. If you start with 30, 10 of them are going to get there, going to be either homesick, get a girl pregnant, not really want to be there, be too far from home or whatever, and just whatever. Just maybe that's where they shouldn't be. You know, I mean, not that it's good, bad, or indifferent, but life happens, right? That's 10 of them. So now you're down to 20.
Right.
You get another 10 that are there, probably are part of your football program. You hope they get degrees, you know, and are good citizens that have come there and, you know, whatever. But they're just on your team. Maybe by the time they're a senior, they're a backup or
they're contributing,
you know, they contribute
players
to
but,
the program.
Right.
Exactly. And that's great. I mean, that's an amazing thing to have done, and it should never be belittled.
Right.
Because to play college athletics anywhere, but especially at the Big Ten level, and to get a degree from a great academic institution is a great thing. So now you're down to 10. And again, I'm not going to say that the numbers aren't slightly different at a USC than they are at an Eastern Michigan, and not to belittle anyone who is a Huron or an Eagle, but you would be naive or unfair to say that what happens at USC is comparable as what happens in Ypsilanti. So we're down to 10. So if in any recruiting class you get 10 kids who come in, who are able to make it through the academics, who don't get in trouble, who don't want to be there, and yet are good enough that maybe by the time they're a sophomore, they're maybe a starter, a three-year starter. Okay, so now let's say five of them are those. So So now maybe you're down to another five that are actually good enough to maybe be all conference, move
ahead.
If
you're lucky.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, so again, and I get this from my Michigan friends. Well, you only belittle recruiting because Michigan State isn't good at it. No, I'm not making that point at all, because what I'm saying is I don't care what university you go to.
Well, you can belittle recruiting when a school has a higher recruiting ranking and they lose four straight games to their rival. That's what you can do.
And I'm not, Jack, you can go down that road. Not me. But my
yeah,
point
I just did.
I would say, and again, I would challenge you. I mean, and I know Tom Lemming obviously does this. He does very well. There are other services. They make good money doing
it. Right.
And, yes, people follow, myself included. But I would challenge any of them to go up against what I just said.
Yeah. Todd, thanks so much. We appreciate it. That's a very good point. I think, Graham, he makes an excellent point about recruiting, and we're going to ask our next guest a recruiting question or two along the way here. Obviously, coaches can't talk about specific athletes, although I was sitting next to Hugh Bernreiter from the Saginaw News last night, and he was telling me about a Michigan State recruit who's coming in and what she's going to add in the years to come. But we want to welcome in the coach of the Michigan State Spartans, Susie Merchant. Hello, Susie. How are you? Susie, are you there?
I am.
Okay,
how are
great.
You?
I'm just fine. Congratulations on the victory last night over Michigan.
Well, thank you. I'll never turn out a congrats on that, beating those guys, that's for sure.
It was, I believe, 18-14. Michigan was ahead, and the next thing we knew, it was a 40-15 explosion, and that was the end of the game. Can you talk about how that happened?
Well, I think a couple things happened in the course of that time. I mean, certainly I thought our defensive stops became more prevalent and in back-to-back situations that allowed us a little bit of aggression in the transition game. If anyone was at the game, Michigan plays a lot of 2-3 zone. So to tackle a 2-3 zone, obviously you have to move the ball around and spend a little more time on offense than maybe some quick hitters and opportunities to score. So for us to put more points on the board, we've really been trying to do a better job of defending field goal percent defense and making people miss. We got away from that a little bit, even though we've been a good defensive team. I think we dropped a little bit. So that was our focus, and I think that led to a lot of easy opportunities for us or advantage opportunities.
When people say how difficult it is to penetrate against a zone, you proved that to be wrong by moving the ball and moving players and getting in seams and creating great opportunities. I thought you had excellent shots last night.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, this is a pretty set-driven team. I mean, I think they survive best under those circumstances offensively, unless it's in transition, just given our numbers and personnel. So we've worked pretty hard. We've got, a bunch of quick hitters that we run against the zone that allow a Clarissa Bell to penetrate the zone or a Jasmine Thomas or a Kiana by putting people in different positions to stretch the zone a little bit. So I was glad to see that, came to fruition last night, because Michigan's done a really nice job in that 2-3 zone of not letting people penetrate.
Susie, Graham Couch here. Congratulations. Wanted to ask you a little bit. Do you ever look at this team that's won as many games as you have, it's done what you've done, and think, if we just had a couple more pieces, I thought we were going to have where the ceiling could be?
I mean, it's not natural not to think that, but on the other side, Graham, I think, maybe it's worked in our favor, certainly not for the talent that's sitting there, but we have some talented kids that were waiting for their opportunity, and for whatever reason, under these circumstances, it's given them more of an opportunity to showcase what they can do. And I'm really proud of the growth and the maturity of all of our players, and certainly a few in particular that have, certainly helped our success. But, you can't help, especially for us from a defensive standpoint. I mean, you can't not look at a Madison Williams, for example, and wonder what it would be like to have a rebounding shot blocker in there. And Jasmine and Becca are good in their own right. They're just different, And so, I think a little bit along those lines. But I also have moved on. And, we've got a great group of kids, and they fight and have great effort every night. And that's really all you can ask. I mean, if it's good enough to win, it's good enough to win. But this team will never lay down. So I'm proud of them from that perspective.
What is the ceiling for this group? And I know you've got Penn State coming up next, probably the only team that's kind of handled you guys this year. What's the ceiling for this group, and what do you guys have to do to be competitive at Penn State?
Well, you know, just like the men's side, it doesn't get any easier. I mean, it's we've got a lot ahead of us. There's still 7 games left in the league, and, you know, I'm not, as you know, Jack, you know this about me, I'm not one to look ahead a whole lot except for the next game. And, you know, Penn State is a very, very talented team. We're going to have to handle their pressure better. They did a nice job of getting us a little bit rattled. And when we didn't score the ball, obviously, it made it easier for them to throw the ball into a very large basket, or so it seemed to look to them in our place. We're going to have to defend the post a lot better, too. I mean, I think that's it in a nutshell. I thought Becca and Jazz were a little bit better in the Michigan game from a defensive perspective, and that's something that we have to look at. When we played at Northwestern, both those kids had 4 fouls at the 16-minute mark of the second half, and we just can't have that, you know. So they got to be able to defend without fouling.
I thought you got some great basketball out of Courtney Schiffauer when you went a little smaller lineup last night. Our guest, Michigan State women's basketball coach Susie Merchant, after a big win over Michigan, and the Spartans have a date with Penn State, league-leading Penn State, this weekend, and see if the Spartans can close some ground on the Queens of the Big Ten right now. Susie, I know this wasn't your favorite line of questioning last night, but Kim Barnes of RICO was asked it almost nonstop during her press conference. The 12 straight wins in the series for Michigan State and 20 out of 21. And as you said, hey, this is a rivalry and you can't deny it. You can't minimize it. It is an important game.
Well, it is. And I think I mentioned that, you know, growing up in this state, I know what it's like. You're not in between. You're a Michigan or a Michigan State fan, either one. And you don't grow up too often liking them both. So, you know, for me, I had 2 brothers that went to Michigan State. I would have loved to have been a Spartan, and now I have the opportunity to be a Spartan in a different way. So, yeah, we're all green and white in my house, and as my 6-year-old says, blue and yellow makes green, Mom. So I go with that line a lot.
Well, there are a lot of people who saw you play at Central Michigan who wished you'd been a Spartan, too, and I was talking to one of the writers who saw you there last night.
Oh, I'm so sorry he had to witness the nonsense back in the day.
No, he said that you played with a competitiveness, that you were kind of a female version of Scott Skiles with your fire and leadership out there.
Well, the problem with that comparison is that I couldn't make a basket. He was a much better scorer than I was.
Susie, in terms of a 16-game conference schedule, as opposed to the 18 that the men are playing, and there's talk that as the conference realignment continues, that number is still in flux. How much difference does that make to you for the preparation of your team over the long haul?
Well, on the women's side, Jack, we really like that because of the RPI situation. I think there's so many competitive, top-heavy conferences out there with some quality teams that kind of load the NCAA tournaments, and we have a ways to go. We're not where the men are quite yet, so for us, we like a less game schedule so we can go out and schedule different people that challenge us depending on where our teams are. You've seen our RPI in the conference go up every year. We were the number one ranked non-conference RPI league in the country. So I think we have a good recipe. If you look at the, you know, some of the other teams before they started doing expansion on the women's side, they were 14 games or 16 games. They were never, you know, play everybody twice on your side and everybody, you know, once on the other. I don't like an 18-game schedule just because, you know, it's not the reality of what you're going to see in the postseason. And, you know, it gives us a chance to play different opponents and different styles that we might see in the postseason, and it helps our RPI, at least from a women's side. I can't speak for Coach Izzo.
Does it diminish the regular season title to you that you don't play everybody home and road and maybe where the matchup is change the result, or because it's much more playing everybody, you know, once, it evens itself out?
Well, we still play people twice. It's kind of like the men's side in some ways, too, Graham. It's you know, on my way in, I was talking to Izzo in his office and looking at his schedule, you know, and it's like, you know, some of the teams they've had to play, they only get to play like a Penn State once.
Right.
I think Illinois was once. I can't remember who else he said was once that maybe were teams that, you know, they could get victories on they had played twice. And instead, they've got the Indiana's twice, the Wisconsin's twice, the Ohio State's twice. So, you know, some of it a little bit is a luck of the draw. I mean, it's a rotating schedule. It's just sometimes in coaching, you don't get to see the rotation if you don't win enough.
I guess you can look at it the other way too, Susie, besides not getting to play the bottom teams twice. Purdue doesn't get Penn State in women's basketball to come to Mackey Arena this year.
Yeah, they only played them once. They just played them. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's either way. I just think you can't really worry too much about it. It's scheduling is its own, its own nightmare in a lot of ways.
Drive yourself crazy if you worry about that.
Yeah, right? You just worry about the guy you're playing next and figure out a way to compete and give yourself a chance.
Well, you managed to land Penn State and Purdue in the last few weeks here, so that's...
Yeah,
that's...
didn't I do great on the scheduling? Love the Big Ten Conference. Love them.
Susie, we were talking about recruiting a little earlier, and in terms of what you have to do, can you give our listeners a little insight into how much recruiting you do on a daily basis during the season?
Well, it's funny you should ask, as I'm behind the wheel right now, driving about 3 hours to get to my next game, and I'll be on a plane tomorrow, and Saturday night I was in a gym. I'm out 2-3 times a week on top of practices and travel and team prep. So that's the grind of it. I think a lot of people forget, that fortunately, I guess, on both sides of it, is the head coach is what matters now. And not that our assistants don't do a good job, but it just seems like now with young people that if the head coach isn't in the stands
right
necessarily enough, that they are telling, people behind the scenes are saying, well, Michigan State doesn't really want you if they're sending their assistants. I mean, Purdue or Illinois or Michigan came here with their head coach, So there's a lot of pressure now. I think kids really want to see, and parents and family members want to see the head coach. So it's the reality. It's what we do. And I like to recruit. I just don't like always all the nonsense that goes with it.
How early are you starting to recruit kids, and what's the earliest age you start to see, how does that person project?
Well, I mean, there certainly are limitations. I know that, Graham, and that's not your question. But I mean, we have eighth grade kids that come to our games, and I would say that's probably the youngest. And maybe from a female perspective, too, because there's a lot of developing and maturity, especially with the female body, that you just don't know. I mean, a kid could be unbelievably built as a ninth or a tenth grader, and that unbelievable build changes, and it could change for the better or it could change for the worse, too. You just don't always know. And so for us, we don't race to throw out scholarship offers like a lot of people do. And I just think I want to get it right, and I want to meet them, and I want to look them in the eye face-to-face, and I want to know their family, because to me, character is just as important as the talent piece. So you're one player away from getting fired in this business. So, for us, we do spend a lot of time before we throw out scholarship offers on kids.
And you're one slip away from having a key contributor go down for the year, as you know as well as anyone. How difficult does that make the recruiting process when your plan is keyed on one thing and something else happens, and now you don't know exactly how to compensate for that in terms of future classes?
Yeah, what? I don't have another 6'7 McDonald's All-American blocking shots sitting on my bench. What's wrong with me? Oh, man, I'm not doing my job, I guess. No, you're right. It's hard. And what I like to do, too, is maybe different from other college coaches. I'm a big believer in walk-ons. We've got a couple kids on our team that are walk-ons that I do like to give scholarships to if I have the availability. I just think they bring a lot of value to your program. You don't need every kid upset and annoyed about playing time. So I really like kids that want to be part of Michigan State's atmosphere and the Spartan Nation and really could care less about the playing time, just wear the uniform with a lot of pride and give to their teammates. So I do that, too. I have them if I need them, but if I don't, I always try to reward a walk-on or two with them. Like Tracy Noble on our team, for example, has had a scholarship for 3 years.
Susie, one of the other things that was mentioned several times last night, and I think there were people who hadn't been to some Michigan State games before, certainly some people from Ann Arbor who were getting their first look at the Michigan State women's basketball experience. I had a couple people say, is it always like this? I said, well, you can get a crowd if you play Michigan and Tiddlywinks, but it was very impressive to see everyone there last night. Of course, all the pink and tribute to Kay Yao. and the fact that the Big Ten Network was there doing the game, I thought that that added a little something else to it on a Monday night. It made it special, and to see that environment, it had to be a little bit intimidating.
Well, I think so, and I know there were five seniors on Michigan's team and roster that have been in that environment. In fact, had played in that sold-out game when we sold it out, if you remember, a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I was a little worried about it because it was a Monday night at 7:30. And, you know, our fan base is a little different than the men's, and we rely a lot on young families, and it was a school night and whatnot. So I was so thankful and appreciative, and I mean, immediately when the game was over, sent out a tweet thanking everybody for coming because, you know what, you want to put your best foot forward every night, but especially when it's your arch rival. So I thank them so much for their energy and enthusiasm and showing them exactly what women's basketball is all about in this state.
You mentioned sending out a tweet. One thing I've learned very quickly about Coach Tom Izzo is there maybe nothing? There's maybe nothing in life he loathes more than Twitter, for better or worse. What? How has it changed? You know, your operation, and just in terms of how you use it, and also, how do you advise your players with it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it has its good and its bad, like everything. And I know I always push coaches a little bit in that regard, just because it is a big deal, and it's the way kids operate now and our society operates now. And I know you don't like it, but the reality is I think it's here to stay, and then it'll stay for a while, and there'll probably be something maybe a little bit better. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I think for me, it's important that I'm on it from a recruiting standpoint, and that's the number one reason why I have a Twitter account.
See, Mark D'Antonio has one now.
Yes, I know, and I follow him. And I know, I'm just waiting for Izzo, but I think he's going to be, I said, you're getting to be like Judd. Are you that old already?
Have you ever regretted a tweet?
I never have, mostly because I just really overanalyze what I put out there. And the other thing, Graham, that you know this, because you both you guys, because of your Twitter account, is the direct message feature.
Right.
And when a kid is old enough, on our side, we have a little different rule than the men's side, we can use that, and it goes directly to them. So even though we can't text them like the men can, we can use direct message as long as they're juniors in high school. So we use it as, you know, communication tool from the direct message standpoint.
Why are the rules different?
Well, they're about to change. I mean, you know, the men, it was just getting too ridiculous, and too many people, I think, were pushing the envelope and basically cheating. So I think they just said, you know, make the NCAA look pretty silly over cream cheese on bagels and too many phone calls or text messages. So I think they're trying to deregulate. And, you know, once one thing starts on the men's side, it'll end up, you know, trickling down. Like, for example, we didn't have summer access rule. We're going to get summer access rule this upcoming summer. So we'll get the 8 hours of practice time now.
Susie Merchant, head coach of the Michigan State women's basketball team. If you haven't had a chance to see this team, and I'm not saying this because she's on the other line, I'm saying it because you get a great effort every night. They play very hard. They play very entertaining basketball. And it's not like they have a leading scorer every game. You know who it's going to be. Last night, Becca Mills came in. You can almost get a pool going in the stands on who's going to be the leading scorer for the Spartans. And that makes a very fun team to watch. Home games coming up against Indiana and Northwestern later this month. And then senior day against Wisconsin on March 3rd. Susie, good luck on the recruiting trail. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Okay. Susie Merchant. We will be right back with more. And we're going to talk about Michigan State men's basketball and the Big Ten picture after the Indiana win over Michigan, how the conference is shaping up, and who are the teams to watch as we get close to the NCAA tournament. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR. AM 870.
On the next Fresh Air, Michael Apted, the director of 56 Up, the eighth in a series of documentaries that has followed the lives of several British men and women every 7 years, beginning when they were 7 years old. Also, we talk with Rebecca Luker about her new album of songs by Jerome Kern. She starred in Broadway revivals of Showboat and The Sound of Music. Join us.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio. Jack Ebling.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. A high of 27 with 1 to 3 inches of snow expected today. There's a chance of overnight snow with a low of 10. Mostly sunny and a high in the mid-20s on Wednesday. Thursday, the high in the mid-30s, with an inch or less of new snow.
Jack Ebling here with Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal, and we have about 15 minutes left in the show. We have a couple of tickets here for the Michigan State Bowling Green hockey game this Saturday night at Munn Ice Arena. We're going to give those away. If you have an interest, give us a call. The number to call for the tickets is 884-4783. That's 884-4783. And we also have some tickets to give away, believe it or not, for the Michigan-Michigan State basketball game. And that is on Tuesday, February 12th. And I don't know whether we should give these away or not, Alex. We're going to give them away? Okay. We're probably not. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. But we are going to have some hockey tickets to give away here. And if we decide to hang on to these basketball tickets, we'll just do that for tomorrow. Very special show tomorrow as we focus on signing day with Dan Kilbridge and Sean Shearer of 24/7 Sports, and we'll be talking about that a lot.
I tell you, Dan Kilbridge is certainly,
I don't know, you know Kilbridge pretty well.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I like him. We just shot a video yesterday on the recruiting class, and what I love about Kilbridge and all these guys is we can go through it, and I've got to really prepare.
Yeah.
I just say a name. Dan's got a visual in his head. Yeah. He's got a projection. He's got everything. And, yeah, those guys really, I mean, they know their stuff at a different level for that.
That is their number one job.
Yeah.
Even more than team coverage. And in terms of Sean, it's basically his only job.
Yeah.
So, and he knows more about what 15-year-olds do than anyone should.
Yeah.
But I want to talk to you a little bit, Graham, about this Michigan State basketball team, what you expect in the rematch against Minnesota, and how you view the logjam at the top of the Big Ten. Now you've got Indiana with a one-game lead, and there are a lot of competitors.
Yeah, it's Indiana is the number one team in the country, but I think of them as the number three team in the Big Ten right now.
You do?
I do. I don't think they win. I think it took an incredibly hot shooting performance, like 22 free throws, and a bad start by Michigan to beat the Wolverines, who were without Jared Morgan. Whether he is, how much he adds, I don't
Jordan
know.
Morgan
Jordan
was
Morgan, sorry.
Basically,
yeah. Covered a kid named Jarek Morgan in Freeport a long time ago. I was getting too confused. And then with, I don't think if Appling plays, they beat Michigan State the way that game was going at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do. And you're going to find out. But they've got to go, you know, to Michigan State,
right,
to Michigan, to Ohio State. And they've got a home loss against Wisconsin. So if everybody holds serve, you know, that home loss is going to come back to bite them. Michigan State's got that road win at Wisconsin, which is going to help. And when I look at those teams, if you just take the pieces, I'd rather have, if healthy, what Michigan State and Michigan have than what Indiana has. You think, believe the same or no?
I think Michigan State's been fortunate this year. A lot of fans aren't going to want to hear this. If they got a bad break with Keith Appling and a couple of fouls that held him to 19 minutes and 3 points at Indiana, I think they got tremendous breaks in terms of Roy Devin Marble not playing for Iowa.
No question.
Ubel not playing for Nebraska. Kaminsky didn't play for Wisconsin in a day when they couldn't throw it in the ocean from the boat. So, you know, you get three of those in very close games, and suddenly, you know, you could be close to 500 instead of where they are at 7-2.
So the way, and they could. The way I look at it is based on the last week of basketball, or really after, when Michigan State was playing Iowa, did not look like a contender to me.
Did they look like a contender to you at halftime of the Illinois game?
Absolutely not. And there's where the question is. I mean, are they going to be consistent? Do they have the leadership? I mean, I wrote a column about this right after that where
right.
I don't, you know, I think Derek Nix is one of the more enjoyable guys to cover.
Right.
But I'm not sure this team has a guy who really gets it on the court and you know, puts that team always in a position to be ready. But when you've got Brandon Dawson
right.
speaking for the team after the game,
yeah,
I mean, you know, Brandon, I mean, he's a, you know, a young guy, nice guy, but that just shouldn't be at this stage
right.
his role.
Right.
And to me, that,
some
that
of the
is
issues
where
that team faces.
That's where the question is. But when you say upside, and you look at what Adrian Payne and Brandon Dawson and Keith Appling have been playing lately.
Right.
I think, and I think their upside, if healthy, with Gary Harris, is greater than Indiana. And I love Oladipo. I think
right.
Cody Zeller is obviously a great player. And maybe a bit overhyped because he's so hyped.
Right.
But, yeah, I would, and I'd still take Michigan over Michigan State right now, though.
I'm going to give you a little of the downside. We'll talk about the upside.
Yeah.
We don't know what Gary Harris is going to be able to do Wednesday with the back spasms. Maybe he'll come out and score 20 points. We don't know that. It doesn't look like Travis Trice is going to be able to play. If Gary Harris can't go and Keith Applin gets in foul trouble, you're playing guard. So,
see, you shouldn't say that. I'm delusional, Jack.
you just might suit up.
Yeah, I would suit up and think we'd have a good shot. That's the problem. But yeah, you're right. And maybe you'll see Denzel Valentine point. They'd probably lose that game if Harris can't play and Appling's in foul trouble.
They might lose it with those guys.
You're absolutely right, because Harris is a huge, huge difference. The Trice loss and over the course of the long haul is big, because he provides depth. You can't play Appling 40 minutes a night. But on a given night, if it's one or two games, Minnesota-Purdue on the road, you can get by, because he is essentially a reserve. And he's also, I think Trice does a lot of good things, but he also, his weakness, and I think the biggest place he needs to improve, and this will probably happen as he has a summer where he's healthy and does other things, is understanding his athletic limitations.
Right.
Every time he drives in to the lane, you can count on a block. I mean, you can write down block on your score sheet.
Sexton guys, they got inflated ego. No.
That's Valentine. No, did I say Valentine? I meant Trice.
Oh, you're talking Trice. Oh, I'm sorry.
You can count on. No, I would never say that about Big Red. But you can count on a block. The mid-range game isn't really. I think the drop-off between he and Appling is substantial enough that on a one or two game basis, playing Appling 40 minutes a night, playing Harris 34, if he's healthy, it doesn't hurt you. The problem is you can't do that over the course of a Big Ten season and have those guys survive.
Right.
So he's got to be healthy eventually. But Harris, to me, if you don't have Gary Harris, you're vulnerable against just about everybody on your schedule outside of maybe the bottom couple.
Your outside shooting goes way down. Yep. And if you don't have Harris, you don't have Trice. Now, you have Valentine. Maybe you can play 30 minutes. Maybe you can get 35 out of Appling. You've still got 15 minutes.
That's when the legend of Russell Bird begins.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. We talk about legends. I got a lot of comments for a column I wrote the other day about Derek Nix, and I want to talk about this for just a second. I don't know how much thought you've given to this, but the idea of Derek Nix playing in the National Football League has been something I've thought about for a long time.
He's got better offensive line size than he probably does big man size.
That's right, for the NBA. Yep. He's 6'9". He has exceptionally long arms. He has quick feet. He has an 1,100-pound leg press. And every time I look at this guy, I think this is an NFL left tackle.
And the question, and that's the thing, I don't know, his body doesn't always look like it in terms of the way it's molded and strength. But I covered this before, actually. I covered a kid named Joe Wright at Western Michigan. Mm-hmm. Who was a kid, again, 6'7". If he had been 3 inches taller, as an NBA player, kind of a bull in the china shop, great leader,
right?
And very smart. I think Nix is a smart guy too, who can pick, and he's a starting guard for the Indianapolis Colts now. And, was a big high school football player as a tight end and whatnot, and got put on a practice squad with the Baltimore Ravens for a couple years, converted to a tight end while he put on the weight. Nix could easily put on whatever weight he would need.
We've
to put
seen
on
it before.
Yeah.
I did one of his games when he was 340.
Yeah, I don't think weight would be his problem. You may be right. And certainly the thing that's, I think, a difficult decision for those guys is Derek Nix, at worst, is making six figures, $200,000 a year, tax free in Europe.
Yep.
Spending his 20s in places like Greece and Italy and
pretty good deal.
It's a great deal. And when you give that up to make your body an alignment, it's
hard to go
back.
But his chance to make $20 million, if he's ever going to do it, is to turn into Jonathan Ogden.
But there's also the chance that you do that. You spend 1 year on a practice squad, 2 years on a practice squad. Right. You make $88,000 twice, which isn't bad at that age. And then that's it.
Yep, that's
so
true.
So there's a risk.
That's the gamble you take. All right. Let's go out to the phones. And line one, Ray, you're on with Jack and Graham.
Guys. You guys want taking over for Earl?
I'm here for the rest of the week, and we're going to have a different co-host each day, and then I think we're going to have some different people sitting in this chair for a few weeks after that.
Hey, I got a couple questions for you. Can you rank me the top 10 classes in recruiting in football right now? Also, that Super Bowl there, I want to talk a question about that, if you can give me the top 10, maybe.
Go ahead and give us your Super Bowl question, and then we'll take it off the
air. I thought that was a super dud first half, but after that power outage, it just seemed like that game turned into a great game. The first 10 or 12 were just super blowouts. The last 10 or 12 been really great games. that interference. I didn't think he had a chance to catch that ball in bounds, but he might have been able to get his feet in where the ball landed. But I thought he kind of initiated. I thought it was a good non-call.
Okay. All right. We appreciate it, Ray.
Can I hear what you have to say about the recruiting and everything?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that. Your take on the end of the game and the call?
I think it is. I think there are two trains of thought, and neither is wrong. One, you don't want to reward a bad play. And I thought the 49ers really screwed that up at the end.
Yeah.
But there's the other train of thought that a penalty is a penalty whenever it happens.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I call it in that instance, but I also don't truly believe in the penalty is a penalty whenever it is. I think what you don't want to do as an official is change a game. And you don't want to be the reason a team wins.
Are you
loses.
Changing a game by not calling the rule?
It's a good argument. It's a really good argument. To me, if that and I may, that ball might have been catchable too. I don't know. That's a great. I mean, if I'm Jim Harbaugh,
right?
I've got one view. If I'm John Harbaugh,
absolutely.
I got another. I think it's. I think
if
you
you're
can
Jack Harbaugh, you're sitting there. You don't know what to say at this point. You're just happy and sad.
It's a hard play because if you're that official and you make that call, you've just given the 49ers the Super Bowl.
Well, I don't know. Have you? You haven't given them a touchdown. You've given them another chance.
And there is a little bit of time, perhaps.
You've given them the ball, and you know they still got to get in the end zone because the penalty doesn't give you a touchdown.
It gives you a fresh set of downs from really close range.
Yeah.
And with a mobile quarterback and Frank Gore.
You like their chances.
I like their chances.
Ray, we're going to actually take tomorrow and go through all the recruiting lists, and we'll have it for you top to bottom, up to speed. Let's take a very quick call here from our friend Jerry in Hazlett. Hello, Jerry.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ebling. It's funny. When I think of the words jack and couch, I usually think of Ebling laying on one.
I think you could say burning one. That's couch on fire. We'll talk about that later.
A great team. Very, very quickly, guys. One of the things about the MSU basketball team that has been bothering me, and I don't know, maybe it bothers the coaching. I just don't think this is a very, I hate to say this, I don't think they're very intelligent. Mm-hmm. I think they make, as a team, they make very poor decisions. And I think Trice is suffering from the fact that he's missed off seasons to even build up. I don't think his handle, quite frankly, his Big Ten quality, I don't think he's strong enough physically to withstand the kind of pressure that he gets from the conference and guards in the half court. But, you know, again, that's something that, that might be as attributable to injury as and the offseason as anything else. And one last thing, guys. Does Bobby Knight know that that ESPN has snuck in their 9 o'clock starting times again this year? Or has anybody dropped him off the memo?
I don't know. Does he have a problem with the late games? Is it an age thing?
Well, if you remember the 9:30 Big Monday thing years ago, Bobby Knight was basically the point person for rolling those starting times back because of classroom considerations, players, et cetera.
Right.
Believe me, it was quite a controversy, and they pretty much put the kibosh because Bobby Knight was screaming about it. Probably the loudest. I just noticed the later starting times of the Big Ten have kind of bumped into the schedule again.
Hey, Jared, thanks so much. We've got to run. I appreciate the call. Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal, our guest, will be back tomorrow with much more News Talk 870 Sports. Tomorrow, we're going to have Dan Kilbridge and Sean Shearer. We'll have a special recruiting show for you. Coming up, Rico Beard. Fox 2 will be with us on Thursday. And then on Friday, we're going to have a special show with Tom Crawford, my old partner. And we're going to have tickets to give away all week. We've got hockey tickets to give away. We'll talk about that. And of course, we've got a couple sets of basketball tickets. So much, much more coming up on a busy week here on AM 870. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, everyone. Have a great afternoon.
From NPR News.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.